Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. Lori Sobranski on behalf of the appellant, Sergeant Mattou. I'm going to try to reserve 5 minutes of time for my rebuttal. Under Graham, the reasonableness of Sergeant Mattou's conduct is based on the objective facts that he faced at the scene, what he saw and what we can see on the video. These are undisputed objective facts that must be accepted by the jury and that underpin both the excessive force and qualified immunity analyses. So it's important that we know what they are. First, two shots are fired on a public street in West Oakland in front of, across the street from a very busy BART station during commute hours that sends bystanders running for cover. Two men are on the sidewalk struggling over a gun. Mr. Tindall is lying on the ground with his left hand around the grip of the gun. Mr. Newton is kind of over him with his hand on the barrel of the gun, pointing it away from himself. The men ignore repeated commands over 8 seconds to show their hands. Then Mr. Tindall, with the gun in his left hand, moves up onto his knees, turns his back to the officer, and moves both hands in front of his body where the officer can no longer see. The gun does not drop. 2 seconds later, Mr. Tindall raises an empty left hand, which previously had held the gun, and kind of raises his upper body and turns it toward Mr. Newton. Sergeant Mattou fires a half a second later, and the gun falls from Mr. Tindall's hand, right hand, when he's shot. So from these objective facts, Sergeant Mattou deduces correctly that Mr. Tindall transferred the gun from his left hand to his right instead of dropping it, and therefore Mr. Tindall remained armed as his left hand was raised. The only thing we don't see from that video is what was happening with Mr. Tindall's right hand when he had the gun, because his back was to Officer Mattou, and we can't see that. Plaintiffs argued at trial without evidence that Mr. Tindall was trying to surrender, but Mr. Newton was doing something that we can't see that prevented Mr. Tindall from raising that right hand. And in that case, they argued there cannot be an imminent threat. And they argued that what Sergeant Mattou should have done was to just wait until he knew for sure whether Mr. Tindall posed a risk of shooting. So
Counsel, let me, you make it sound like all they did was argue that. The jury, as a matter of finding a fact, found that Mr. Tindall was attempting to surrender. Don't we have to assume that in our undisputed facts too?
Well, the reason we can't assume that is because there was no substantial evidence to support that finding. And this is kind of one of the fundamental problems with the analyses going forward. The question that we're answering is whether a reasonable officer in those moments could have assumed, as Sergeant Mattou did, that Tindall might fire the gun at any moment, since knowing this, shots had already been fired, orders to show hands were ignored, Tindall had transferred the gun from one hand to the other instead of dropping it, and then turned his body towards Mr. Newton. Does an officer have to assume that Mr. Tindall's continued possession posed no immediate threat, since Sergeant Mattou didn't know for certain whether something he couldn't see was preventing Mr. Tindall from raising his hand? You're right, Your Honor. The jury did decide that Mattou's threat assessment in that moment was constitutionally unreasonable, and they made two factual findings, that Mr. Tindall was attempting to surrender, and that Mr. Tindall possessed the gun in the moments before it fired. So the problem that I see with Your Honor's question, which is a totally legitimate question, of course, is that even with the constraints of a 50B motion, there has to be substantial evidence in order to support the jury's finding. It cannot be based on speculation. In this case, there is no substantial evidence that Mr. Newton was doing anything with Mr. Tindall's right hand that prevented Mr. Tindall from raising both hands in surrender. No one could see it, and plaintiffs concede that. The video doesn't show it. Sergeant Mattu didn't see it. There's no objective sign of it. Mr. Tindall never says it.
Excuse me, if you don't mind a question. Do you contend that if he raised one hand, that's a surrender? Or you have to have two hands raised to be a surrender?
Sergeant Mattu testified that in his training and his experience and his perception, you have to raise two hands to show surrender unless there's some obvious reason that you can't.
Okay, that was a witness. We don't know what the jury believed. Was there any instruction?
No, there was no instruction about one hand versus two hands, so we don't know what the jury believed. We know that the jury found he was attempting, and we know that the jury found he also had the gun. So we can't look at the attempting to surrender finding in isolation. We have to look at them together. So they think he's trying to surrender, but he has the gun. So the question is, what does a reasonable officer on that scene in that moment at that time?
I agree with you completely, and it's a very persuasive argument, but it seems to me it's foreclosed because the jury looked at it as a matter of fact. How do you get around that?
Because
I'm sympathetic because these cases are terrible to try. I've tried them.
But it's not a matter of fact if there's no substantial evidence to support the jury's finding.
If there was no substantial evidence to support the finding, the trial judge would have said the jury verdict is not supportable and would have found the opposite to be true. And you keep saying that the jury also found that Mr. Tindall possessed the gun, but it seemed like they were thinking both of them were still struggling over the gun, and both of them might have possessed it at the same moment. The trial judge said you don't have to make that finding, in terms of whether it was joint possession or whatever. But look, I've been doing these cases. I've been wearing the black for 32 years, and I've seen jurors bend over backwards to clear police officers in situations where I was shocked that they were giving the officer every benefit of the doubt, not just under the jury instructions, but under their personal experiences. Now, this one may have gone the other way in the sense that the jury didn't give Officer Mattu what I might have given him in terms of benefit of the doubt. But, you know, does that mean that the jury verdict should be cast aside? I might have granted summary judgment in this. I'm not sure. But once you submit it to the jury and you give them those instructions, which were not objected to down below, and the separation of the issues was not objected to down below, how can we ignore the jury verdict? How can we just say, well, that's just wrong? There's no evidence to back that up. There's no reason.
I'm not suggesting that we should just ignore it, but I'm suggesting that on review, our job is to look to see whether it is legally supportable. And in this case, I think there is just no evidence that would have supported a finding. In order for the jury to decide that he was attempting to surrender, they had to find that Mr. Newton was interfering with Tindall's hand. And the only thing that told the jury that was argument by counsel. The only evidence about it in this record was Mattu's expert, Mr. Freeze, who did a 3D forensic animation, who said, given Mr. Newton's size and body position, it was not possible for Mr. Newton's hands to actually reach Mr. Tindall's hand with the gun that would have prevented him from raising it. There was no expert to counter that. Plaintiffs just criticized Mr. Freeze, but there was no contrary evidence. And even if you discount him, you're still back to the place where you have an argument that this might have happened. No one knows. Both parties admitted, and no one knows what was happening behind Mr. Tindall. We don't know to this day what was happening with that hand. So I'm not saying we should ignore it. I'm saying we have to look at the jury's findings to see if they are factually supported, and we can't speculate about what they might have thought or concluded in it, in terms of whether somebody was, they were jointly possessing or whether they had control. We don't know. All we know is that they decided that Mr. Tindall possessed that gun and that he was simultaneously attempting to surrender. So was Mattel's perception reasonable, knowing what he knew, not after the jury?
Why shouldn't we interpret the jury? So the verdict form wording was agreed to by the parties. Why shouldn't we interpret the verdict form as being about what a reasonable officer would have observed? So it seems like you want to say that this surrender was just subjectively not something the officer would have understood. But isn't the question on the verdict form about what the officer would have understood?
You know, I think the question on the verdict form was vague in that. I think the question on the verdict form probably should have been, and if it were a do-over, I would say the question should be, would a reasonable officer have perceived that he was attempting to surrender? But I will also say this. The fact that there was a decision that he was attempting to surrender, whether we use the perception or whether we use it, doesn't end the question. Because a suspect that is attempting to surrender but has all of these other factors going on simultaneously that the officer is perceiving is not the final word. And we know that from cases that have recently been published. In fact, one that Judge Wallace is very familiar with, Amons versus Tindall, for example, where it was a very similar situation. And there was an attempt to surrender, but the court said you have to look at the circumstances of the surrender. In Amons, which is a recent case from 2021, two officers responded to a drug sale in a restaurant parking lot. They approached Mr. Amons sitting in the driver's seat of the car. The officer noticed a gun in the center console within arm's reach. They commanded Mr. Amons to put his hands on the steering wheel, which he did. And then when an officer opened the door, Mr. Amons reached his right hand down toward his hip. For 5 seconds, the officers commanded Mr. Amons to put his hands up. He put his left hand up, but not his right hand up. He put the right hand back down, moving toward the gun. And a fraction of a second later, the officer fired. This is very similar to what happened here. The district court made an inference that he was reaching for his seatbelt, and this court reversed and said, whatever we think he was trying to do, he was attempting to do, he failed to put his hands up as ordered. He reached in the direction of a gun that was inches from his hand.
It just seems like your effort to say he was only attempting, it was only subjective. Why wouldn't it be your burden to get the verdict form to be worded the way that you think you need it for your defense? I don't understand why we can just now disregard the verdict form because you never fixed it.
Well, I'm not saying the verdict form is fatal to anything. The verdict form is what it is. I mean, what I'm saying is, even if you take the verdict form at face value and that he was trying to surrender, that's not the end of the inquiry for Officer Mattu. Officer Mattu is looking at all of the objective facts before him. And maybe he says, gee, he's raising the left hand, maybe he's trying to surrender, but gosh, on the other hand, he has a gun, and he could have dropped that gun, but he didn't drop the gun. And now he's turning toward this other gentleman who is in the line of fire, and I'm in a public place, and people's lives are in danger. That split-second decision that Officer Mattu make is the exact kind of decision that we cannot, that we, courts are should be so reluctant to second guess. Because
you only have a minute left. Did you want to save any time for rebuttal?
I will save it. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Ayanna Curry, representing plaintiffs in this matter. I feel like, based on the judge's questions, you're honing in on certainly plaintiffs' issues with the appeal. First of all, what is substantial evidence? We listened to that whole colloquy, and you wouldn't know that there's a video of the incident. The jury got to see exactly what the officer got to see. That's one.
That's not. Is that true that he saw exactly the same thing?
Well, okay. So his eyes are it was established that his eyes are 15 inches above the body cam. So that's my second point. We have the jury did have the video, but they also had the officer's testimony and his officer involved, the OIS interview statements that happened within hours of the shooting. He was represented by counsel at the OIS and he saw the video for himself before he ever gave initial thoughts and the initial justification for the shooting. His initial justification for the shooting is that Mr. Tindall was standing up and faced with the specter of him standing, I had to shoot him. And then at trial has to walk it back and admit he wasn't standing. I was mistaken. So you have the jury is faced with an officer who is impeaching his own credibility and is falling on his sword saying, yeah, I got it wrong. And now at trial is adhering to a narrative that he didn't put forward.
We don't know what the jury decided. We don't know what the jury decided.
No, I'm telling you what they had in front of them.
They could have anything. I was a trial lawyer before I was a judge, and you're never able to guess at times how juries come out. So sure, I don't give that much weight.
I'm just trying to point out that they had a credibility determination based on the officer's varying justifications.
We don't know how they decided this case. You don't know if they believed the officer completely, but just interpreted what they believed differently.
Sure. I appreciate your point, Judge Wallace. The other point, getting back to my initial concern about, well, what is substantial evidence? We have video evidence. We have testimonial evidence. The officer initially said that he could see that they were still struggling over the gun. Again, that was during the OIS statement. Then at trial says, could see no impediment to his right hand, to Mr. Tindall's right hand. That simply just is not true based on his own previous statement.
And the video does show them struggling over the gun.
And the video does show struggling over the gun, mightily struggles over the gun. Life and death struggle over a gun. So this notion that there's no evidence flies in the face of what the whole trial was about and what the whole whole denial of motion for summary judgment, why the issue went to the jury in the first place. You have objective factors of objective signs of surrender. Show me your hands, and then raising the hand that you physically could raise. And he was on his knees. He wasn't picking up. Those are objective signs of. So the question of the trial was: Is it reasonable to see objective signs of surrender, view them as a threat, and then shoot a man in the back three times based when he is surrendering? This term of art in terms of attempting to surrender, he was surrendering, and he got shot for it. Got shot for complying with the officer's commands to do what he was saying to do. This notion that the recreation expert, that was evidence, the recreation expert had the other assailant, the other man's left arm at his side. I think that's clear on the video that both of his hands were in the fight. Mr. Newton never gave up the fight, never stopped what he was doing. When we initially see the men and we see the gun on the ground, Mr. Newton had that gun pointed away from him. When the gun comes out of view, that provides circumstantial evidence that he had that gun away from him at that point too. That's why he never stopped his action. That's never why he never stopped what he was doing. You can make why it is that the facts that and the inferences from the facts that plaintiff draws is not supported by substantial evidence, but the officer, everything that he, deduction that he made somehow is evidence. We are all making inferences and deductions from the evidence in front of us. And they are both supported by substantial evidence. You cannot, as the judges are, have pointed out, take this verdict away from the jury because the evidence, because you could come to a contrary conclusion. And that's where we are. I wanted to talk about Amons. That case is distinguished. There, the officers could see the right hand and gave him every opportunity to raise his right hand, and he didn't. There was no impediment to his right hand.
So, we could go on forever with these cases. Indeed, the police officer said, "Show me your hands, Pearl," and he shows one hand. And you could assume the police officer is afraid the other hand had a gun because they're struggling for a gun. We can't go back and make these determinations.
We can't.
I don't see how we get help that when you have a jury, the jury makes the decision. And unless there's something to say that the jury, we cannot accept the jury decision, like that somebody was paid $100, I don't see how this argument is getting us very far along, regardless of how you come out, how you wish the case would come out. But go ahead.
I appreciate your point, and I don't disagree with you. We have a jury verdict. We have, as Your Honor pointed out, special interrogatories that were written by the defendant and given to the jury without alteration. The jury was asked the questions that defendant himself wanted to know. So I don't know how you crawl over and take the verdict. The request here is to not only overturn the verdict, but to enter judgment for the officer. I'm just as flummoxed. I don't know how you do that based on the facts that we have here. I will address qualified immunity. You know, that's why the case went to trial. The question is surrender and compliance. The jury found surrender, and surrender means no threat anymore. So you can't use deadly force against a compliant, surrendering suspect. Because this will be my last opportunity to talk, there are other issues that was in the briefing. There's this notion that the damages were excessive. The defendants took a gamble on not arguing damages to the jury. And we had, it's again, the damages award is supported by substantial evidence. One, you could see for yourself the video. You watch this man die, and you watch him writhe in agony as he's dying. And you have the coroner's testimony as to what's happening in, what you can't see, what's happening inside his body. Bullets ripping through his internal organs, and he's literally drowning in his own blood. It's the most excruciating thing I could think of. So even in that argument on appeal, somehow we're disagreeing that the video even shows pain and suffering. Again, looking at that video, I don't know how, I see plenty of pain. I don't know how we quip about what the man is experiencing as we watch him die. And the last point about evidence, it's axiomatic at this point. Like, you can't consider evidence that the officer didn't know at the time of the shooting for the Fourth Amendment claims. They want to bring in evidence that the officer was not then aware and that did not factor in to his decision to shoot or use force. It's not relevant, and it would have been explosively prejudicial to have allowed it. Do your honors have any other questions for me? We will submit on. We'll submit on our briefs. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you have a bit of time for rebuttal, maybe 1 minute.
Not much. Okay. We continue to, it is not true it is not true that it was clear from that video that what was happening with when Mr. Tindall moved the gun from left to right, that Mr. Newton was bothering that arm. There is absolutely no evidence to support that. None. We know that he had the gun in his right hand when he was shot. So the fact that we have a jury that said he was attempting to surrender, we still have to consider fully that he had the gun in his right hand. So the officer is looking at all of these situations. All of those things I listed as objective facts are what we see on the video. It's not inferences. It's actual facts. On qualified immunity, this is what's important. This is probably the most important issue, really, to resolving the case. If it is not enough to say qualified immunity applies because he was attempting to surrender, you have to consider all of the factual circumstances, all of them, that this officer faced. When you look at the totality of the circumstances, what case was clearly established at that time, given all of these circumstances, that what Officer Mathieu did was unconstitutional? There is none. It's plaintiff's burden to prove that. Not a single case that they have offered or that the district court offered shows that it was clearly established at that time that Mathieu could not make the judgment in an active shooter situation with a gun and shots already fired that there was an immediate threat and he had to resolve that threat. So
I think I have to interrupt you there because you're over yes. your time.
Thank you for being generous.
Thank you both sides for the very helpful arguments. This case is submitted and we're adjourned for the day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.